Welcome to the Sagebrush Trail. Stories of Western adventure, ranging from the frontier to the Yukon. I'm Ardell, reading The Virginian by Owen Wister. Chapter 15. The Game and the Nation, Act Second.
"That is the only step I've had to take this whole trip," said the Virginian. He holstered his pistol with a jerk. "I've been fearing he would force it on me." And he looked at empty, receding Dakota with disgust.
"So near back home," he muttered.
"Known your friend long?"
whispered Scipio to me. "Fairly," I answered. Scipio's bleached eyes brightened with admiration as he considered the Southerner's back.
"Well," he stated judicially, "start awful early when you go to fool with him, or he'll make you feel unpunctual."
"I expect I've had them almost all of 3,000 miles, said the Virginian, tilting his head toward the noise in the caboose. "And I've strove to deliver them back as I received them, the whole lot. And I would have, but he has spoiled my hopes."
The deputy foreman looked again at Dakota. "It's a disappointment," he added. "You may know what I mean."
I had known a little, but not to the very deep, of the man's pride and purpose in this trust. Scipio gave him sympathy.
"There must be quite a balance of 'em left with you yet," said Scipio cheeringly.
"I had the boys plumb contented," pursued the deputy foreman, hurried into open talk of himself. "Away as long as far as St. Paul, I had them reconciled to my authority. Then this news about the gold had to strike us. And they're a-dreaming nuggets and Parisian bolivards," suggested Scipio.
The Virginian smiled gratefully at him. "Fortune is shining bright and blinding to their delicate young eyes," he said, regaining his usual self. We all listened a moment to the rejoicings within.
"Energetic, ain't they?" said the Southerner. "But none of 'em was whelp savage enough to sing himself bloodthirsty. And though they're straining mighty earnest not to be tame, they're going back to Sunk Creek with me according to the judge's orders. Never a calf of them will desert to Rawhide for all their dangerousness, nor I ain't gonna have any fuss over it. Only one is left now that don't sing. Maybe I will have to make some arrangements about him."
"The man I have parted with," he said with another glance at Dakota, "was our cook, and I will ask you to replace him, Colonel."
Scipio gaped wide.
"Colonel, say," he stared at the Virginian, "did I meet you at the palace?"
"Not exactly meet," replied the Southerner. "I was present one morning last month when this gentleman ordered frog legs."
"Sakes and saints, but that was a mean position," burst out Scipio. "I had to tell all comers anything all day, stand up and jump language hot off my brain at 'em, and the pay don't near compensate for the drain on the system. I don't care how good a man is, you let him keep a tapping his presence of mind right along without taking a layoff, you'll have him sick. Yes, sir. You'll hit his nerves. So I told them they could hire some fresh man, for I was going back to punch cattle or fight Indians or take a rest somehow, for I didn't propose to get jaded and me only 25 years old. They ain't no regular Colonel Cyrus Jones anymore, you know. He met a Cheyenne telegraph pole in 74 and was buried. But his palace was doing big business and he had been a kind of attraction. And so they always keep a live bear outside and some poor fella fixed up like the colonel used to be inside.
and it's a terrible mean position. Of course I'll cook for you. You've a dandy memory for faces. I wasn't right convinced till I kicked him off, and you gave that shut to your eyes again, said the Virginian. Once more the door opened. A man with slim black eyebrows, slim black mustache, and a black shirt, tied with a white handkerchief, was looking steadily from one to the other of us. "Good day," he remarked generally and without enthusiasm, and to the Virginian, "Where's Schaffner?" "I expect he'll have got his bottle by now, Trampas." Trampas looked from one to the other of us again. "Didn't he say he was coming back?" "He reminded me he was going for a bottle, and after that, he didn't wait to say a thing." Trampas looked at the platform and the railing and the steps. "He told me he was coming back," he insisted. "Well, I don't reckon he has come, not without he clumb up ahead somewhere, and I must say, when he got off, he didn't look like a man does when he has the intention of returning." At this, Scipio coughed and pared his nails attentively. We had already been avoiding each other's eye. Shorty did not count. Since he got aboard, his meek seat had been the bottom step. The thoughts of Trampas seemed to be in difficulty. "How long's this train been started?" he demanded. "This here train?" The Virginian consulted his watch. "Why, it's been fanning it a right smart little while," said he, laying no stress upon his indolent syllables. "Huh," went Trampas. He gave the rest of us a final unlovely scrutiny. "It seems to have become a passenger train," he said, and he returned abruptly inside the caboose. "Is he the member who don't sing?" asked Scipio. "That's the specimen," replied the Southerner. "He don't seem musical in the face," said Scipio. "Pshaw," returned the Virginian. "Why, you surely ain't the man to mind ugly mugs when they're hollow." The noise inside had dropped quickly to stillness. You could scarcely catch the sound of talk. Our caboose was clicking comfortably westward, rail after rail, mile upon mile, while the night was beginning to rise from earth into the clouded sky. "I wonder if they've sent a search party forward to hunt Schaffner," said the Virginian. "I think maybe I'll join their meeting." He opened the door upon them. "Kind of dark in here, ain't it?" said he, and lighting the lantern, he shut us out. "What do you think?" said Scipio to me. "Will he take them to Sunk Creek?" "He evidently thinks he will," said I. "He says he will, and he has the courage of his convictions." "That ain't near enough courage to have," Scipio exclaimed. "There's times in life when a man has got to have courage without convictions. Without them, or he is no good. Now your friend is that deep constituted that you don't know, and I don't know, what he's thinking about all this. If there's going to be any gunplay," put in the excellent Shorty, "I'll stand with him." "I go to bed with your gunplay," retorted Scipio, entirely good-humored. "Is the judge paying for a carload of dead punchers to gather his beef for him? This ain't the proposition worth a man's getting hurt for himself anyway." "That's so," Shorty assented. "No," speculated Scipio as the night drew deeper around us, and the caboose click-clucked and click-clucked over the rail joints. "He's waiting for somebody else to open this pot. I'll bet he don't know but one thing now, and that's that nobody else shall know he don't know anything." Scipio had delivered himself. He lighted a cigarette, and no more wisdom came from him. The night was established. The rolling badlands sank away in it. A train hand had arrived over the roof, and hanging the red lights out behind, left us again without remark or symptom of curiosity. The train hands seemed interested in their own society and lived in their own caboose. A chill wind with wet in it
came blowing from the invisible draws and brought the feel of the distant mountains.
"That's Montana," said Scipio, snuffing. "I'm glad to have it inside my lungs again."
"Ain't you getting cool out there?" said the Virginian's voice. "Plenty of room inside." Perhaps he had expected us to follow him, or perhaps he had meant us to delay long enough not to seem like a reinforcement. "These gentlemen missed the express at Medora," he observed to his men simply. "What they took us for upon our entrance, I cannot say, or what they believed. The atmosphere of the caboose was charged with voiceless currents of thought. By way of a friendly beginning to the 300 miles of caboose we were now to share so intimately, I recalled myself to them. I trusted no more of the Christian Endeavor had delayed them. 'I'm so lucky to have caught you again,' I finished. 'I was afraid my last chance of reaching the judges had gone.' Thus I said a number of things designed to be agreeable, but they met my small talk with the smallest talk you can have. 'Yes,' for instance, 'and pretty well, I guess,' and gave strikings of matches and thoughtful looks at the floor. I suppose we had made 20 miles to the imperturbable clicking of the caboose, when one at length asked his neighbor had he ever seen New York. 'No,' said the other, 'flooded with dudes, ain't it?' 'Swimming,' said the first. 'Leaking, too,' said a third. 'Well, my gracious,' said a fourth, and beat his knee in private delight. None of them ever looked at me. For some reason, I felt exceedingly ill at ease. 'Good clothes in New York,' said the third. 'Rich food,' said the first. 'Fresh eggs, too,' said the third. 'Well, my gracious,' said the fourth, beating his knee. 'Why, yes,' observed the Virginian unexpectedly. 'They tell me that eggs there ain't liable to be so rotten as you'll strike 'em in this country.' None of them had a reply for this, and New York was abandoned. For some reason, I felt much better. It was a new line they adopted next, led off by Trampas. 'Going to the excitement?' he inquired, selecting Shorty. 'Excitement,' said Shorty, looking up. 'Going to Rawhide,' Trampas repeated, and all watched Shorty. 'Why, I'm all adrift, missing that express,' said Shorty. 'Maybe I can give you employment,' suggested the Virginian. 'I'm taking an outfit across the basin.' 'You'll find most folks going to Rawhide if you're looking for company,' pursued Trampas, fishing for a recruit. 'How about Rawhide anyway?' said Scipio, skillfully deflecting this missionary work. 'Are they taking much mineral out? Have you seen any of the rock?' Rock, broke in the enthusiast who had beaten his knee. There. And he brought some from his pocket. 'You're always showing your rock,' said Trampas sulkily. For Scipio now held the conversation, and Shorty returned safely to his dozing. Went Scipio at the rock. He turned it back and forth in his hand, looking it over. He chuckled and caught it slightingly in the air and handed it back. 'Porphyry, I see.' That was his only word about it. He said it cheerily. He left no room for discussion. You could not damn a thing worse. 'Ever been in Santa Rita?' pursued Scipio, while the enthusiast slowly pushed his rock back into his pocket. 'That's down in New Mexico. Ever been to Globe, Arizona?' And Scipio talked away about the mines he had known. There was no getting at Shorty anymore that evening. Trampas was spoiled of his fish, or of learning how the fish's heart lay. And by morning, Shorty had been carefully instructed to change his mind about once an hour. This is apt to discourage all but very superior missionaries.
and I too escaped for the rest of this night. At Glendive we had a dim supper, and I bought some blankets, and after that it was late, and sleep occupied the attention of us all. We lay along the shelves of the caboose, a peaceful sight, I should think, in that smoothly trundling cradle. I slept almost immediately, so tired that not even our stops or anything else waked me, save once, when the air I was breathing grew suddenly pure, and I roused. Sitting in the door was the lonely figure of the Virginian. He leaned in silent contemplation of the occasional moon, and beneath it the Yellowstone's swift ripples. On the caboose shelves the others slept sound and still, each stretched or coiled as he had first put himself. They were not untrustworthy to look at, it seemed to me, except Trampas. You would have said the rest of that young humanity was average rough male blood, merely needing to be told the proper things at the right time. And one big bunchy stocking of the enthusiast stuck out of his blanket, solemn and innocent, and I laughed at it. There was a light sound by the door, and I found the Virginian's eye on me. Finding who it was, he nodded, and motioned with his hand to go to sleep. And this I did, with him in my sight, still leaning in the open door, through which came the interrupted moon and the swimming reaches of the Yellowstone. Join me next week on the Sagebrush Trail for more Western Adventure in the Virginian by Owen Wister.